A Contra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge. Simplify, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking on something pretty significant.
Definitely.
We're charting the landscape of the Western world, really, in the generation leading up to 1914.
That crucial period.
Yeah, we're diving deep into Barbara Tuchman's examination of that era, The Proud Tower, a portrait of the world before the war, 1890-1914. It won a Pulitzer.
It did. And this book is just essential, I think, because it challenges how most of us, you know, learn about that time.
How so?
Well, we often look back at those years before World War One with this sort of golden glow, don't we?
Right. The Belle Epoque, elegance, peace,
prosperity, all that. Tuchman basically pulls back the curtain. She shows us the violent contradictions, the deep cracks just bubbling under the surface.
Exactly. So our mission today is to really get into Tuchman's argument for why.
Not just how it happened.
Precisely. Why a civilization that seemed so advanced, so secure, could inflict World War One on itself.
Yeah.
We're not focused on the immediate run-up, the diplomacy stuff.
Which she covered brilliantly in The Guns of August, of course.
All right. Here, we're digging down, looking for the rot in the foundations of that proud tower.
And our guide, Barbara Tuchman herself, is quite a figure. Lived 1912 to 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Became one of the most respected popular historians of the 20th century. And what's amazing is she was largely self-taught.
Really? A self-taught scholar who won the Pulitzer?
Twice.
She really took on the historical establishment.
So what makes her perspective, especially in the Proud Tower, so distinctive? Because this feels much broader than just, say, military history.
It absolutely is. She has this amazing ability to combine serious intellectual rigor with just really compelling character-driven storytelling.
Okay.
Her real genius, I think, is in synthesis. Social cultural history. She believed history isn't just treaties and armies.
It's more about, it's shaped by ideologies, group psychology, you know, the follies and passions of actual people. The Proud Tower is really the essential prequel to The Guns of August.
Not setting the stage.
Exactly. Yeah. It gives you the cultural climate, the mindset that made the war possible, maybe even inevitable.
So she's providing the deep backstory, showing how the world thought and felt in those 24 years leading up to the disaster.
That's it, precisely.
Okay, let's get into the central premise then, because it really does bust some myths.
It does. Tuchman argues that this period, 1890 to 1914, it wasn't serene at all. It was like a pressure cooker.
Right.
Full of these violent contradictions, these simmering, unresolved tensions, social, political, even psychological.
Her main idea then is that this grand structure of Western civilization, this proud tower, was fundamentally flawed, dangerously so.
Yeah, and the explosion of 1914 wasn't some accident. It was the inevitable result of forces that had been building for decades.
Things like
relentless nationalism, deep class conflict, the rise of anarchism, and the sort of intellectual turn away from reason.
And the book's structure reinforces that, doesn't it? It's not just A led to B led to C.
No, not a strict timeline. It's more like a mosaic, a collection of, I think, eight powerful essays.
That's right.
Each one is like a window onto a different part of the era. The British aristocracy in one, the anarchists in another, the Dreyfus Affair.
So it's a thematic tour, really.
A tour of the Western world's soul, maybe. Showing how the seeds of the 20th century's horrors were already there, deep down, in a society that thought it was at its peak.
A society that was arrogant, unequal.
And dangerously blind to its own flaws.
Okay, so let's build that tower first and then look at the cracks she identifies. She kicks off in England with the patricians.
Right. The British aristocracy. Figures like Lord Salisbury, the Prime Minister.
This is the Proud Tower epitomized, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? Immense wealth, political power, this absolute belief in their right to rule.
It's the old order at its most confident. Tuchman paints them, you know, they're sophisticated, often competent rulers.
Yeah.
But they were already deeply anxious. Their whole world built on tradition, privilege. It was elegant, sure, but brittle.
And out of touch.
Completely disconnected from the huge democratic socialist labor movements surging up. They were kind of denying reality, denying that change was even possible.
So if the aristocrats represent denial, Tuchman immediately contrasts that with outright rejection, the chapter on the anarchists.
Exactly. This is where the discontent turns violent. driven by this idea of propaganda by the deed.
The belief that only shocking violence could wake people up.
And what's brilliant is how Touchman treats them. She doesn't just write them off as lunatics.
No.
She sees them as a symptom, maybe the most visible shocking symptom of just how alienated parts of society felt.
Mm.
You look at the assassinations, the Empress of Austria, the King of Italy, French president. She argues they were often, and this is a key phrase, men made mad by the inequities of society.
Wow. So they're a reaction to the tower's own arrogance.
A dark reflection, in a way. A denial on one side, yeah. Rage on the other.
Okay. Shifting focus now to France. Give me combat and the Dreyfus Affair. This seems like a perfect case study for Tuxman.
Oh, absolutely. A microcosm of how these tensions could just rip a society apart.
The false conviction of Captain Dreyfus, a Jewish army officer.
It polarized France for a decade. Tuxman makes it so clear this wasn't just a legal case. It became the battlefield for everything.
Like what?
Justice versus state authority, republicanism versus the old guard, the army, the church, and of course, virulent anti-Semitism.
She shows how easily reason, evidence, all the things that age supposedly valued just got steamrolled by tribalism, by ideology, by pure passion.
Mm. And how powerful institutions would sacrifice an innocent person to protect their own prestige. It's chilling.
Then Tuckman looks west, to America, in End of a Dream.
Right. The U.S. starting to shed its isolationism, stepping onto the world stage with the Spanish-American War.
And she frames this as a kind of moral crossroads, doesn't she?
It's definitely. On one side, you've got the imperialists, like Teddy Roosevelt, pushing for empire, global power.
But she also highlights the opposition.
Yes, strongly. Figures like Speaker Thomas Reed, who warned that empire would betray America's founding ideals. Liberty, self-government.
So the victory of imperialism
marked the end of American innocence, as Tuckman puts it. It pushed the U.S. right into that same messy, militaristic, morally compromised world she's analyzing in Europe.
Which kind of leads perfectly into maybe the most cynical chapter, the steady drummer, the Hague peace conferences.
Oh, the irony is just dripping. Pure political theater.
These conferences were supposed to be about disarmament, arbitration.
Yeah, but Tuckman shows they were basically a PR exercise. While delegates were making grand speeches about peace, their governments back home were locked in the biggest naval arms race in history.
Britain versus Germany, especially.
Exactly. So these conferences were just talk. They achieved nothing meaningful in terms of limiting war.
It really backs up your thesis, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The ideals of peace were just this thin veneer.
Covering up a society that was actively, determinedly gearing up for war. The proud tower wasn't just rotting. People were slapping paint over the cracks while building bigger cannons in the basement.
And speaking of Germany, she covers that too, right? And narrowism is in the air.
Yes. She identifies Germany as this place of incredible industrial and scientific might.
Like that.
But channeling that energy in a disturbingly aggressive way. She talks about the cultural influence of thinkers like Nietzsche, the whole will to power idea, and this bombastic, militaristic culture.
Creating a sort of cult of war.
Yeah, a dangerous romanticism. Seeing conflict not as a failure, but as this necessary, almost spiritual national destiny, a society kind of detached from liberal, rational values.
And all this builds towards the final failure she documents.
The death of Jaurès, which is just heartbreaking. It's the end of the Socialist International's dream.
The idea that workers across nations were united.
Exactly. Class solidarity would trump national loyalty. They thought they could prevent a war with a general strike.
But when the crunch came, July 1914,
nationalism was overwhelmingly stronger. Jean Jaurès, the great French socialist leader, the most powerful voice for peace, assassinated by a nationalist.
Right before the war broke out.
Days before. And his death just symbolized the collapse of internationalism. Within days, German socialists, French socialists, they all voted to fund their national war efforts.
Wow.
That moment, Tuckman highlights, the workers' internationalism drowned in a tidal wave of nationalism. It just sums up everything. The tragic failure.
The death of Jaurès really crystallizes it all.
Yeah.
Okay, let's pull back and look at the core messages, the big themes Tuckman wants us to take away.
Well, the first big one is definitely puncturing that illusion of the golden age.
Like, look beneath the surface.
Yeah. Progress, technology, fancy parties.
Mm-hmm.
None of that stops violence, extremism, or conflict. She wants us to be skeptical, you know?
Healthy skepticism. Okay, theme number two.
The overwhelming power of nationalism. It just trumped everything else.
We saw it in the Dreyfus Affair.
fracturing France, we saw it fueling Germany, and most tragically, it destroyed the socialist dream of international solidarity.
It proved stronger than class loyalty, stronger than international law.
Stronger than almost anything. The enduring, maybe tragic, lesson is how powerful loyalty to the nation state can be.
And tied into that, the third theme seems to be the failure of reason and internationalism.
Absolutely. The Hague conferences, empty words. The socialist international, this huge transnational movement, it just folded at the first test.
It shows how fragile idealism is, doesn't it? When faced with primal patriotism, tribalism.
Yeah, the civilized conversation just vanished when the war drum started beating.
Tuchman just had such a way with words, capturing these huge ideas so vividly.
She really did. Let's talk about some of those key insights, those lines that stick with you.
Okay.
She nails the duality of the era perfectly. She says the proud tower was built with grandeur and passion, sure, but it also contained more injustice and hypocrisy, more misery and want.
That really gets at the rotten foundations, doesn't
it?
It does. And her view of the anarchist is so insightful. Not just madmen, but men made mad by the inequities of society.
Seeing the cause behind the extremism.
Right. Understanding that radicalism often grows out of real grievances, even if the response is distorted. It comes from pushing against a rigid system.
And that line about the socialists.
Oh, it's devastating. The one we mentioned. When the moment of choice came, the workers' internationalism drowned in a tidal wave of nationalism.
That's basically chapter 8 in a sentence. Powerful.
And finally, capturing that dangerous mindset about war. Paraphrasing. But the idea that war was seen as the only remedy. A dream of blood and beauty and death.
Chilling. That conflict wasn't the last resort, but somehow romantic, necessary, even for educated people.
That mindset helps you understand why leaders were willing to gamble with catastrophe.
These aren't just historical observations, though. There are real applications for today, aren't there?
Definitely. The first big lesson, I think, is to recognize the warning signs of societal fracture.
Like the Dreyfus Affair analogy.
Exactly. Tuchman shows how one event can reveal these deep fault lines. Intense polarization. Attacks on institutions. The justice system. The press. Rampant misinformation. That aggressive us-versus-them thinking.
We need to apply that lens today. Look for those signs in our own time.
We do. And the second lesson from The Hague. Judge leaders by actions, not words.
Don't fall for the virtue signaling.
Precisely. Pay attention to budgets, to policy. Where is the money going? What are they actually preparing for? Not just the fancy speeches at summits. Look at the actions.
Look at the balance sheet, not the press release.
You got it. And the final practical takeaway, ideas have consequences.
Philosophies, the ideologies, they didn't just stay in books.
No. Nietzsche, anarchism, dreams of empire. These ideas filtered down. They shaped how people saw the world. They motivated real action.
So it underscores the importance of responsible public discourse.
Yeah, understanding that the ideas we debate and spread actually matter. They shape reality.
So wrapping up, what's the single most valuable lesson from the Proud Tower for you?
For me, it's that huge historical disasters are never truly accidental. World War I wasn't just bad luck or a mistake. It was the logical, maybe inevitable, outcome of a society filled with unresolved conflicts, dangerous ideas, and leaders who were often arrogant or blind or both.
And that leaves us, the listeners, with a pretty sobering thought, doesn't it?
I think so.
The forces that ripped the world apart in 1914, nationalism, class anger, the tension between our tribes and global connection, they haven't gone away.
Not at all. They're still incredibly potent today.
So the lasting insight from the Proud Tower is maybe just how fragile civilization actually is, that constant tension.
A chilling but essential recognition. It's a vital book for understanding how our modern world came to be.
Couldn't agree more. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.